So this is the address you were given listed in your notes. We're doing BGD Practical 3 today. This year I've moved the notes from the original website and reorganized them slightly for this new format. It basically has the same content that we did in 2008 Cycle at A, but I have updated it and it's better links to the glossary and better navigation. Students used to get lost. So before we start, let me remind you again how we're going to go through this. In BGD Cycle A, I have three practicals with you. The first one we're doing today runs from fertilisation events through to implantation. So really all the way through to the third week in development. The second practical will take from that third week of development right the way through to the end of the embryonic period, week 8, and discuss the major components that are occurring during those weeks of development. The third practical I run with you will be covering the two second and third trimesters through to birth. In parallel with these two classes, you'll have a fourth class that covers this period here from week 3 onwards with Dr. Murray Smith, which will be the development of the placenta and fetal membranes, mainly a histological class than a dynamic one. In today's class, I will touch upon some placental abnormalities because this relates to the implantation process as well. Now, on every page, you'll always find your practical link just here. So if you get lost somewhere else, this always appears on the left-hand menu. And in terms of what I need to get through in the class today, at the top of the page will be this link with a little green shell with a list of the pages as we work through them in sequence. For BGD Cycle A, we're basically going through in a bit more detail, or quite a bit more detail, than we did in Foundations with you, where we gave a superficial view of development. In this cycle, we'll be going through and look at key events at different stages. I'm going to talk about each one of these single pages, stop, give you about 10 or 15 minutes to ask questions of the tutors, see if there are any problems with the content, and then I'll go on to the next section. I basically expect you to understand the concepts and details that are listed on the pages. I do give you additional information and links to elsewhere, but that will be supplementary to the content that I'm covering in today's class. All right? So if you've bought yourself a textbook, it's covered in Larson's Embryology in the first three chapters, chapter 1, 2 and 3. And if you've bought the Moore and Passard, The Developing Human, it's covered in chapter 1 and 2 of that textbook. And I know there are other textbooks as well. It's generally the first couple of chapters of any textbook you get. So at the top and the bottom will be this link. The glossary is there to help you with terms you haven't heard before. I'm gradually adding links into the text so you can get those as well. And on some pages I've put a list of terms. So I thought I'd start with content that you've already covered in terms of the histology. And that is the development of the gametes. You've done oogenesis of the ovary and you will cover spermatogenesis in another histology prac towards the end of this group in BGDA. So a lot of this content you should already understand, and I've mentioned it in the lecture. Let's start with oogenesis. And to begin with, let's have a look at this picture here, a histological picture of the infant ovary. And this is the tunica albuginea out here. This will be the peritoneal cavity, so this is the cortical region. Here's the entire fetal ovary. So we're just looking at this small region. What I want you to notice is the huge thickness of that cortical layer of primordial oocytes. Looks quite different from what you saw in the adult ovary. And what is missing from this fetal ovary that we saw in the adult ovary? What's missing? Immature follicles. Yes, we can't see any follicular genesis. There are no follicles forming here. All we've got in the cortical region are the primordial oocytes. So we're not getting any follicle development. It's not puberty yet. At puberty, we'll get initiation of that process of follicular genesis. So quite a different structure in the newborn infant. If we look at the numbers of oocytes in this graph here, what I want you to see is that the oocytes that form from primordial germ cells, so primordial germ cells are the embryonic cells that develop in the embryo that will eventually make the gametes, both the eggs and the sperm. And if you look at the total number in the ovary before birth, we see about 7 million in humans between the two ovaries, about 7 million oocytes generated before birth. And this is the maximal number of oocytes that you'll ever have if you're a female embryo or adult, generated prenatally. By the time we get to birth, the numbers begin to plummet. So after birth, during childhood, before puberty, the numbers fall back down during childhood to 2 million or so, mid-childhood. And then by the time you get to puberty, you're left with about 400,000 oocytes. So when you begin your reproductive life, you've already lost a significant number of the oocytes that were present at an earlier stage. This is still more than enough oocytes to complete your entire reproductive life. So if you say that we start at puberty at about 12 or 13 and run through to menopause, the end of the reproductive life, mid-40s, then during that entire fertile period, you'll only need about 400 to 500 oocytes, releasing one every month. So you've still got an excess of oocytes, and this is important because we know that every menstrual cycle, we get development and maturation of oocytes and release of one, but what other process occurs during the cycle? Looking around like someone's going to know the answer, and I guess nobody is. So the process that goes on, atresia, the loss of oocytes and follicles by cell death, just as we get programmed cell death in the oocyte itself. So here's our mature ovary, and you can see the difference. We've got in the cortical region a range of different follicle development now occurring in the mainly cortical region. The primordial follicles still lie directly underneath the tunica albuginea, the thick connective tissue layer that forms on the outside of the ovary. That's where all our oocytes still reside, but much less of them. And in the histology class, you saw that they're the smallest, or still larger than the surrounding stromal cells, all around the cortex. As the follicles begin to develop, the oocyte enlarges, the cells get proliferate locally and form these specialised follicle structures, and they go through the stages preantral, antral, and ovulating follicle. There are a whole range of different classifications, but you can see all examples of them here. And development of the follicles occurs mainly in the cortical layer of the ovary. So here's the entire ovary. There's the uterine tube in cross-section. This is a cat ovary, not a human one. In the medullary portion of the ovary, you can see a large amount of vascularization. So the medullary region is about maternal blood vessels. And these maternal blood vessels are radiating out to the cortex, where they branch down into smaller and smaller vessels, ending at fine capillary beds surrounding each one of the follicles. Why do we need so much blood within the ovary?
To make circulation of the hormones produced.
Thank you. Systemic circulation of the hormones produced in the pituitary gland that will stimulate development of these follicles. What's another reason we need for rich vascularization of the ovary. Any idea? Corpus luteum secretes hormones that support pregnancy in the pregnant state, and in the non-pregnant state, the follicles are generating both two specific hormones that we need for secondary sex characteristics and menstrual cycle function, and they are what? What are those two hormones?
Luteinizing hormone and follicular stimulating hormone.
No, that's coming from somewhere else. That's coming from estrogen and progesterone. You had a 50-50 chance. So luteinizing hormone and follicle stimulating hormone from the pituitary gland. Estrogen and progesterone from the follicle cells, from the fecal cells surrounding the follicle. And so that's why the blood's going there. It's bringing growth factors to stimulate follicle development. It's taking hormones from the ovary and putting them into circulation as part of the menstrual cycle that feed back to the pituitary. You've already done the histology, so I don't want to go through it in any great detail. Here are our primordial follicles. These are preantral follicles. Here is an antral follicle. What is in the antrum? What's that pink space? I heard you whisper it. A fluid-filled space. Well, I just said that. What are we going to call that fluid-filled space? The antrum? I just said that too. What haven't I said so far? What fluid is in that space? It's a follicle. Let me hand it to you. Follicular fluid. Thank you very much. Follicular fluid. This follicular fluid accumulates there, synthesized by the granulosa cells, secreted into the lumen, and as the follicle develops, that antrum gets larger, and our layers of the gastrula, the cells around the outside here, that we can see in two layers just here, in a preantral follicle. These are the granulosa cells. These are cuboidal cells that differentiate from the stromal cells of the ovary. And outside of these, in this early follicle, you can see the flattened cells that surround them that will form the fecal cells, the follica. So two layers around the outside, the innermost layer being the one involved in the endocrine function, the outermost layer involved in a connective tissue structure which holds the whole thing together. So this is a preantral. You can see the size of the oocyte, the nucleus. This is an antral follicle. Notice that the oocyte increases in size, as does this thick pink layer, which is what layer surrounding it? The zona pellucida. And the zona pellucida is what? It's an extracellular matrix, a specialized one, made of three glycoproteins that have important functions for maintaining this big cell, this big oocyte, and protecting it, and involved in fertilization and in the first week of development. All of these cells are granulosa cells, these purple cells within the follicle. The two layers of the ceca can be seen outside of that with the capillary beds coming in to pick up hormones. We give different regions of these granulosa cells different names by their location, but they are all granulosa cells. So these ones around here are part of the follicle granulosa cells, and these will remain within the follicle following ovulation and form part of the corpus luteum. These cells that attach the egg to the wall of the follicle are called the cumulus oophorus, and it's at this site here that separation of the oocyte will occur during ovulation. These cells attach directly to the zona pellucida on the outside around the oocyte are called the corona radiata. They radiate out like stars or rays from the sun, and will be released with the egg at ovulation, and they're one of the barriers that the sperm has to pass through in order to fertilize this oocyte. I'd remind you, as I mentioned in the lecture, that the development of this follicle takes more than a single menstrual cycle. To go from a primordial oocyte through to an ovulating or pre-ovulatory follicle takes 3 menstrual cycles to develop. During these 3 cycles, a large number of follicles will go through this process of development, but only one, like the Highlander, only one will be selected to be released at ovulation. The rest of those follicles which have developed will undergo that degenerative process, atresia. Atresia can also occur at any time during development of the follicle as well. So we can lose them along the way as they're developing. There are multiple reasons why a follicle would degenerate. We don't need to go through them today. But be aware that within the ovary, at any one time in the histological sections that you're looking at a dynamic process of oocytes developing into preantral and antral follicles, that growth. And you're also looking at a significant amount of degeneration of follicles breaking down and forming those atretic follicles. Now, the only time that this will differ will be in the case of fertility treatments. There are a number of drugs which can be given to mothers who have fertility problems which stimulate ovulation and lead to the release of more than one oocyte at a time, and potentially more than one fertilisation event. I've included at the bottom of this first page a description of a number of different classifications of follicles. All of them are complicated. All of the literature is confusing as well. Let's stick to something simple that everybody can get a hold of because they can see it, and that is primordial are the ones around the cortex that haven't begun to develop yet. Preantral are the ones with the granulosa cells and the fecal cells being deposited around them, but they haven't formed an antral cavity yet, so they've gone through the early stages of the cells proliferating around them. An antral follicle, when it's grown in size and fluid space now exists inside that single follicle. And of all of the antral follicles, the largest one and the one most sensitive to hormone stimulation is our pre-ovulatory follicle. I'm happy for you to use the term graafian follicle as well. So that's a simple classification. I've included the alternative ones. You'll find it all confusing. You're best to stick to this simple system. I'm going to stop there. Let's have a look through oogenesis, and I'll come back in a couple of minutes and we'll talk about gametogenesis in the male.